This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. Hold on, y'all. With all this talk about making babies that we love to do, let's talk for a second about feeding those little miracles when they come. ByHeart is an infant nutrition company that started with a simple mission: make the best formula in the world. When chest feeding isn't an option, ByHeart's clinically proven easy-to-digest infant formula is there for you. Their patented protein blend gets closest to breast milk. Plus, ByHeart is made with certified clean ingredients and no soy, corn syrup, GMOs, or palm oil. And it's the only U.S.-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed whole milk, not skim. ByHeart also happens to be clinically proven for easier digestion, less spit up, and softer poops versus a leading infant formula, which, trust me, you're gonna want. So tell me, you curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code QUEERFAM for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply. This episode is sponsored by Feathersnap. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feathersnap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or if you're like us living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high resolution camera that connects to an app so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now. Did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Welcome to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay, as we like to say. I'm Jamie, and I'm your host, and I am here with Shan from the Lesbian Moms Club. Shan is here to help me introduce the interview that's coming in, and I am so excited to know you, Shan, and for this collaboration. So hi, Shan.
Hi. I'm so happy to be here. Absolutely.
So excited. So for those of you who might not know who Shan is, Shan, can you give us a 30-second elevator pitch on who you are and why I needed to have you come on and be a guest co-host with me?
Yeah, sure. Of course, like Jamie said, I am the founder of Lesbian Moms Club on Instagram, but it's way more to me than just Lesbian Moms Club, okay? I work in other mom club groups that wasn't receptive of who I was as a two-mom family. So when I saw the need and I was like, I can't be the only one going through this or having to deal with this, you know. And when you have kids involved, you're very sensitive about how people, you know, treat you as well as your kids. So I decided to open everything up in 2021. I wanted everybody to come together. We're just families trying to exist, you know, and trying to have a voice and a say in the way our lives should be. To be honest with you, from the people that I know as well as myself, I don't always just want to talk about my queerness or my lesbianness or gayness. Like, I just want to have regular conversations. But unfortunately, sometimes that doesn't always happen, right? So we have people that not only make us feel uncomfortable, but make us feel like we need to say, hey, look, this is a two-mom family here. And then the energy just switched. It completely changed when I tell people this. So at that point, I began to be guarded. And then I was like, no, I'm not going to be guarded. I'm going to stand proud and be loud. And that's why I started Lesbian Moms Club, to be loud and be proud. And then also just connect with other moms, that have the same lifestyle as I do.
Yeah.
And have kids as well that yeah. we can come together and just yeah. make things happen.
Because visibility really does matter, and it does make a difference yes. in the world, a huge difference, right? On so many fronts.
Yes.
And we have a lot in common with this, because I started the podcast because it took me a really long time to get pregnant. Couldn't find my story out there, right? And so I thought, well, right. somebody has to create this. And then I just did. So same, right? We saw a need because we were feeling not
right.
recognized. That's why we need to know each other. That's why this is so beautiful.
Right.
We were also talking a little bit before we pressed record about how, you know, like I started this show with my white cisgendered co-host lesbian, and I'm white cisgendered lesbian. And so we did really in the beginning, and still to this day, skew towards, like, we've had a lot of white cisgendered lesbian guests. And I've been really working very, very, very hard, trying to work really hard to, like, open it up. And that's why I changed the name of the show, and really trying to, because I want to represent the entire LGBTQIA plus community, right? And I'm still working to do it. But you have a really high audience of non-white queer folks,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think that speaks yes. to like who you are as a person and how you started.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's really important for all of us to kind of band together and work together, and because we are all one community and we have to work as a whole.
Yes. And a lot of people have asked me, like, why don't you show your family as much as you show everybody else's? Because I actually didn't make this account for me. Mm-hmm. I honestly didn't. I made this account to show the world of all the beautiful queer families out there, particularly lesbian moms. But my platform is for everybody who wants to learn, who can come and be respectful. Because like I said, we love allies just as much as we love our yes. own family, right? Because mm-hmm. without them, hey, a lot of these things wouldn't happen, because it always takes people outside of you to make change, right?
Mm.
You have someone else on the outside, like maybe our parents or friends that we might know from work or just around the way, to say, hey, you know, I stand with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I may not be this way, but I do accept you the way you are. That actually opens up change, right? Mm-hmm.
And I will fight for you as well.
Right, right. So I tell people all the time, you know, we love allies just as much. I have people inbox me, hey, I'm not a lesbian. Is it okay if I follow you? And I'm like, sure.
I mean, of course.
We love allies, of course. You know, so I have those TTC questions too. Mm-hmm. And it's beautiful. I just can't wait. My app is coming out in a couple of months. That's going to open up a lot of doors for people to not only get their TTC questions answered, but as you know, and I'm sharing this for the first time here.
Ooh, exclusive,
I know, right?
Behind the scenes.
But there's just not enough Black sperm donors.
No, there are not.
So my app is going to basically, to give you the exclusive, is going to help people. And not just Black lesbians that are looking for sperm donors, but just people in general that's looking for donors,
mm-hmm.
And Black sperm donors.
So the app is going to feature Black donors. And where are you finding mm-hmm. the donors from? Is it just donors across like all sperm banks? Or like how are you finding...
No, they're actually going to be people like you and I that want to just give back. And there's going to be some more things to it. I'm not going to let that out the back yet. But they are just everyday people who are looking to help lesbians.
Oh, so yes, you're finding the donors yourself and they're going to go in the app.
Right.
Oh.
The way it's going to be set up is that you guys are just going to get connected. I'm just that little middle piece, right?
Okay.
And then after that, whatever happens will be, on you guys.
You got to get it buttoned up
and however you want. Yeah, because, I'm not getting into the cryo thing or the vibe. Like, that's not what I do. But I just want to be able to help our community a little.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. This is amazing, Shan.
And I'm not trying to take over what the cryobanks have done.
Mm-mm.
They are wonderful. What they do is what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just trying to fill in that gap, basically. Mm-hmm. It's just saying like, hey, what if there are people out here that don't have $1,000 per vow to
mm-hmm.
give? Or
mm-hmm.
they may need to go multiple cycles, but because they only have enough for one vow or two vows, they can't you know, finish their journey.
Yes.
And I'm just trying to, like I said, just fill that gap. Because again, my daughter came from California Cryobank. Same. And I'm very appreciative of them. Mm-hmm. They are amazing. I just want to put that out there. So people don't think, hey, oh, you're trying to outshine them. No, this is not that. I'm really supportive of what they do.
I wouldn't think that you were doing that at all, but there is a need for the folks out there who can't necessarily afford the price, like you said, and who can't find what they're looking for at the banks, which is a real thing. It's a real thing.
Right.
So, man, that's amazing. So where can everybody find you? And how do we keep them updated about when this app comes? Where is everybody going to find you and be ready for all the updates?
I'm definitely going to share it to Instagram and Facebook as well as TikTok. So any one of those, you can follow me on all three, or if you can want to follow one or two, but either way, you'll get that information when I release it from those platforms at Lesbian Moms Club.
So everybody go follow Shan at Lesbian Moms Club and then share it far and wide when it all goes live, because that's really exciting. This episode that we're introducing is actually international. Catherine also goes by Kit, and her wife, Nicole. They live in Bangkok, and they're from England originally, and they were married in Scotland. Their story goes all over the world. And then they got pregnant in Cambodia because they couldn't, it's not legal. Well, it's not legal to get married as a queer couple or get pregnant as a queer couple in Thailand. So it's a really interesting story. And their path to getting pregnant was really hard and restricted in Southeast Asia. And they just wanted to come on and share their story in case there are other queers over there trying to figure out how to jump through all the hoops that a queer person over there has to jump through in order to make a family. And they were looking for a Filipino donor. And so their donor search, the search for Superman, was an easy one because it was such a limited little supply that they could choose from, which speaks to what you were just speaking to as well. So it's a story, and I'm super excited for everyone to listen. And I'm so excited to know you, and I'm happy you came in to chat with me. And this is the beginning of more. Thank you for helping me introduce this episode with Catherine, who goes by Kit. I'm going to ask my fake assistants who don't exist. Helen and Beulah, please roll that tape.
The Queer Family Podcast.
Wait, Helen, before you roll that tape, this is Jamie's daughter, Rose. I have to tell you that you should join my mom's Patreon. My mom's Patreon. My mom works really hard on this show, but even with the sponsors, she really doesn't make enough profit to hire a real assistant or a team. So please go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast and join now. You'll do a good thing and get bonus contact. She really loves this stuff.
Love is love is love is love.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
It's wonderful to have you. It is the wee hours of the morning for me, and it's like the end of the night for you, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like 8 p.m. here.
We are 12 hours apart because where are you?
In Thailand.
In Thailand. This is our first interview in Thailand. I mean, I wish I was in Thailand right now with you. I had a good time in Thailand when I visited in my 20s.
It's lovely. Yeah. We love living here.
You know what? Let's do it. Let's get right into your 30-second elevator pitch. On your mark, get set, go.
Okay. I'm Kit, and me and my wife, Nicole, have a very international story. We both grew up in basically the same place in England, but we had to move all the way to Thailand to meet. We've now been together almost 7 years, married a year ago in Scotland, wanted to make a baby, but we couldn't do that here in Thailand. So we had to find a clinic in Cambodia, and we did IUI with a Filipino donor, and we're now 24 weeks pregnant. Our story is definitely not an advert for fertility treatment in Southeast Asia because it was really hard and restrictive, but I want to share how we figured out how to do it against the odds.
Ah, oh, beautiful. You went slightly over, but it was worth it. It was worth it because you hit every single point. That's amazing. Okay. All right. Wait. First, you just said that you grew up basically in the same town and didn't meet till you were all the way in Southeast Asia. Yeah. So where'd you guys grow up?
So we're from the northeast of England, and it was kind of like a 40-minute drive, which for people from England is quite far, but I know in America that's really not far. So I moved about 8 years ago, and Nicole moved about 10 years ago. So she was here for 2 years before me. And my first day at the school, because we're both international school teachers, my first day at the school, I met her. She did like a training session, and I was like, oh.
So when you came to Thailand, were you already living that gay lifestyle, or like were you both loving the ladies?
she had she knew that she was a lesbian from being like very little. She said that I think 4 was when she came out initially.
Atta girl.
she was my first relationship with a woman, like same-sex relationship that I'd been in. But I kind of knew before I moved to Thailand, but I hadn't come out to anybody yet because I figured it was quite a difficult conversation to have with people if I then potentially maybe did then went through life without being in a relationship with a woman. I was,
Right. Yeah. Some folks wait to come out until after they find a relationship. Yeah. I waited too. So you meet, it's kismet. It's like you get the spark. and then what happens? Talk about it.
We actually didn't do the kind of lesbian U-Haul thing because she was very worried about that. So we, well, now we look back on it, I did kind of unofficially move in, really. But we didn't officially do it until maybe a year or so. And then we were together a while and we kind of, you know, we talked about getting married. We actually got engaged in February 2020. And then COVID just kind of closed there everything down. We were going to fly back to the UK that summer to do it. And obviously that didn't happen.
Was the plan always to get married back at home?
It's not actually legal to do it here. So I think the only place in Southeast Asia currently that allows same-sex marriage is Taiwan. But I think you've got to be, one of you has to be Taiwanese. I think
you're right. Yeah, because I interviewed somebody from Taiwan.
Oh yeah, listen to
that. Joelle, and I think you're right. And her wife was Taiwanese. So let's unpack that a little bit. What's it like living? Because listen, when I went in my 20s, I was like, holy shit, this is the place to be if you're gay. There were girls walking down the street with like bras on, holding hands. So I figured, oh, this is the place to go. Like, gay is like totally okay here. Sounds like it might not be completely.
Yeah, it's socially, it's an absolutely amazing place to be gay. We feel way safer here than, for instance, I do in my hometown. Like in my hometown, I would think twice before holding Nicole's hand in the street, but it's not an issue here at all. So socially, it's amazing. That's why we've stayed here so long and why we don't really want to leave. But legally, unfortunately, it's not where you would think it would be for the social aspect.
Interesting. So the lawmakers have not caught up to where Thailand has been for a very long time, actually, because I was there 20 years ago.
Yeah.
God, I can't believe I'm that old. But yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So socially it's great. Legally not so much. So y'all decide, okay, we're gonna go back home and we're gonna get married.
Yeah. Well, we knew that we could do it in the UK very easily. And it also, for kind of more practical purposes, it's good to have like a UK marriage certificate. So we thought, well, that's easy to do. Turns out it actually isn't that easy to do in the UK anyway. The laws in England about how long you have to have been in the country before you get married or been in one place before you get married are really... They're really complicated and a bit archaic, really. So the time that we were able to travel back, again, in the depths of COVID, we had to get about 5,000 PCR tests to do it. It actually transpired it was easier to do it in Scotland. So that's what we did.
Wow. I don't even know what the laws are here in regards to being in the country before you get married.
There's like a weird thing where you have to like post your intentions, and then, as I understand it, Nicole did all the organizing of this. But as I understand it, you have to like post, your names have to be posted outside the registry office for a certain amount of time for people to like come forward with their, I object. And
oh God,
it's something
that's
to
like
do
so old fashioned. It's like, interesting. Okay. All right. So When does the family conversation come in? Like, was this way back when you met? Did you start talking about babies right away?
I can't really remember exactly when we started talking about it, but I had known that I wanted to have kids. Nicole thought that she did, but she kind of didn't realize that it was an option for her. She just thought that she wouldn't have a family because she hadn't seen it before.
Right.
So I think we really started properly considering it in summer 2021, because that's when we started going and getting fertility testing done and kind of checking that everything was okay. And then we wanted to get married before that, just again, kind of a legal aspect of it, and to have a bit of protection.
Mm. Okay. All right. So let's get into baby making, because this is the main reason. I mean, your story is amazing, but this is one of the reasons you wanted to come in and tell your story, because it wasn't the easiest journey, was it?
Definitely not. We knew that we couldn't do it here. Because unfortunately, it's not legal for same-sex couples to have fertility treatment here. So it was kind of figuring out, okay, how do we actually go about doing this then? Mm-hmm. We started by doing all the fertility check-in. So I kind of got bloodstone, got ultrasounds, got the HSG, the X-ray, that was horrendous.
Some people, it hurts. Some people don't feel it. Like, I didn't feel anything at all. It's so interesting how our bodies work.
Well, that's good. I remember being in there and thinking, oh God, this is really painful. And I'm trying to have a baby.
It's going to get worse.
I need to deal with this.
It's going to get worse. So you did all of this testing in Bangkok though.
Yeah, we did it here. We did have to withhold quite a lot of information from them. So, Nicole went with me to every appointment, but it was like she was kind of the supportive friend that was, you know, and she was very supportive because she actually came in and asked questions and all that kind of thing. They must have known, but we always call it gal pal.
Gal pal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it kind of like a known thing, but just not spoken? Or was it really like you were really being incognito here?
We had to be incognito because I think the first thing was that the doctors could have said no, like we're not going to do this. But also they could get into trouble afterwards. And
that is scary.
Yeah.
That is scary. But they're okay with a single lady doing it on her own.
No. So you have to be a heterosexual married couple.
So you just were like, my husband is like working abroad or some shit.
That's exactly what I said. Yeah. And she was like, oh, so you've been trying like at home. And I said, yep.
Really hard. It's just not exactly. Working.
I don't know what's wrong. One of the main things that came from that we weren't sure about, that we were a little bit worried about was they couldn't detect any like follicles being matured. So they were saying, and that happened on a couple of occasions. So they never found a mature follicle. And so they were saying, oh, maybe you're not ovulating. And I was doing ovulation strips at home and never got an LH surge or anything like that.
Oh, wow. But you were still getting your cycle, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like there was something going on that was, I don't know, a bit different. But I was very regular and I tracked my periods constantly. So I don't know what the issue was there. But that's for that reason, we were like, right, we know that we're going to have to travel to do this. We're not sure where we can exactly do that. We know that we want to do some kind of medicated cycle for that reason, it was like, well, in that case, we're going to need all the help that we can get, especially as we had to travel. It was like, it was going to have to be timed so perfectly.
Yeah.
So we really didn't know where to start initially. So I joined loads and loads of forums on Facebook. Nicole found quite a lot of people in the area and was speaking to them about how they'd done as either single women or like lesbian partnerships. We have a lesbian couple that we're friends with here as well. And we talked to them about what they did. They did IVF in the UK. So theirs was very different, but at least we could say, so what do you do first? Like, what do we need to know? How do we actually even start this process? Because there's similarities everywhere, no matter where you are. So,
Yeah, but you need a blueprint. It's so hard to figure this stuff out, right? Okay, so talk to people, you realize you're going to have to do some medicated, whatever it is.
Yeah. We needed an international sperm bank. So that was kind of the first place we were like. So it was, there was actually two places that really helped us with the process. One was really speaking to people. The sperm bank helped us find the clinic. That was a massive part of it. And the other thing was getting in touch with Stonewall as well, which is an organization in the UK that helps like LGBT people with pretty much everything. So I got in contact with them and just kind of asked what options were and whether they knew of anything in Southeast Asia and all that kind of thing. So they were really helpful.
It's called Stonewall.
Stonewall, yeah.
All right. Good to know for all the listeners over there.
Yeah. They've also been amazing with, I mean, this is a lot later, but like sending information about like getting Nicole put on the birth certificate and things like that.
Uh-huh. Oh, God, we got to get into that too. Yeah. Okay.
So we contacted the sperm bank. I think we must have found out about the sperm bank from our friends. And we just wanted a big international sperm bank that was going to have like a big variety of sperm because we needed, Nicole is half Filipino. She's Filipino English. So we knew that we wanted at least half Filipino sperm donor, if not full.
How hard is that to find?
Well, we when we were searching for the donor, we opened a bottle of Prosecco because we were like, yeah, it's going to take us ages. And I'd listened to this podcast. I'd been on all the groups and everything. And I was like, it's going to take us ages to find this.
Months. We got months. Yeah. I got my binder ready. I got my organizers ready to stick on. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And so we typed in Cambodia, like where we needed to ship to. And then we clicked, like there was literally one filter that we put on and it was Filipino. And it went from like 750 to like 7. It's like, oh my God. And then it was like, right, out of those, some of them were ID release, which is like known donor, like is prepared to be found at 18. Some of them were non-ID release. So we're like, well, we know that we want ID release, so it's going to have to be that.
And then that narrowed it down.
Yeah. We looked through a few. We kind of, there was hardly any profiles to look through, but actually I think that the lack of choice was the best thing in the end. Because our donor, we were really happy with him. It was actually the first person that we looked at. And we ended up deciding before the bottle of Prosecco was over. Because we saw him, we really liked him. We really liked his letter. He had like a nice reason. All of his questions and answers were really good. He didn't have a voice note, which I think actually worked in his favor because the ones that we listened to, we were like, oh God, no.
There's so many, like, isn't it so weird how a voice can really turn you off or turn you on? Like, you don't realize how much a voice matters until you're listening to these donors speak and you're like, oh, no, 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 no. So funny.
He's Filipino, but he's actually living in the States. He was from the Philippines, but then living in the States. But the sperm bank was Danish. So it was like he'd donated in the States from the Philippines and then it had been stored in Denmark and then shipped to Cambodia and we went to meet it in Cambodia.
Wow. So it was... Okay. Wow. That sperm got around.
Exactly. Because we didn't know where in Southeast Asia we could actually go. We did know of a couple that had gone to India to do fertility treatment, but we didn't speak with them. And that's also really far for us to travel.
Right. So I was going to say, how far is that?
Really far. Like,
yeah.
We wanted somewhere that was going to be easy to travel if possible. Mm-hmm. And so we contacted the clinic and said, look, where in Southeast Asia have you shipped before? Because you also get a discount if they've shipped there before, which is really useful.
The sperm bank.
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
A discount on like packages of sperm or something?
On it was something like 10% discount on each straw.
Oh, okay. All right. Every little bit counts.
Exactly. International shipping was, it was a lot. It was like, I think it was about, in US dollars, it was about $1,000 per sperm vial. Or per straw. And then the shipping was 535 euros, which I think is about the same as US dollars.
Right now it's similar, right?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So it was a lot. And also,
per vial. I love that you call it a straw. That's my new favorite thing. That's new. That's new. And I love it because it's literally a straw. It's like a tube.
Yeah, that was the sperm bank. That was the straw. Now I think about it, straw's weird, but
it's amazing. Yeah. That's my favorite thing ever. Okay, so $1,500 per straw. That's one insemination.
Yeah.
Shit. So what was your conversation about? How much are we going to buy? How are we going to do? Like, because you got to do, because if you ship more in bulk together, is it cheaper? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, I don't know how many straws, vials go in each shipment.
But, in the big R2-D2 tank?
Yeah.
Right.
We initially bought two, and it was that mm-hmm. $535. It was just the shipping fee.
Okay.
Like, for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So we were like, well, first of all, they'd told us, yeah, we shipped to this clinic before. We had a look online at the clinic, and we couldn't find much of anything, really. So we were kind of thinking, does it exist? Are they definitely going to treat us? You know,
And this was where?
This was in Cambodia.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So they said that they'd shipped to them before, and they said everything was okay. So we knew from the sperm banks, like, records, at least it existed, but we didn't know whether we were going to be able to do anything when we were there. We didn't know whether they were definitely going to, they said that they would, but
treat two lesbians.
Yeah.
Treat a lesbian. So yeah. We're not both getting inseminated, but, but you really have, oh God, you're like going on a whim here. Like,
yeah,
you have no way of really knowing that it's going to be okay once you spend $1,500 to get your sperm there.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my God.
So we initially decided, well, we'll just do two. And then if, you know, we haven't lost a huge amount, we knew that we were going to need to buy more than that in the end. But we were like, well, if we ship two, then it won't be the worst thing if we lose all of that money. And, you know, then we can kind of figure it out somewhere else. But we'll ship two, and then we'll think, you know, is this clinic actually any good? Are they going to treat us? Does it exist?
What a scary prospect. First, you don't even know if it exists. So there's that. Second, you don't know if you're going to go there and be like, I'm going to make up a word here, homophobized. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you don't know what you're... That's really scary.
Yeah, it was really scary. And I think on our first IUI try, we'd done everything that we possibly could. So I hadn't had alcohol for ages. I hadn't had caffeine for ages.
Oh my God.
We were eating really healthily. We'd just come from a healing center in Thailand. So we had been doing loads of yoga, eating like vegan food and everything like that.
Such lesbians. I love it.
I know. So we went there to try and say, well, okay, the first try, we're going to try and make everything happen that could possibly, you know, give ourselves the best possible odds for this first one. But really, the stress of not knowing what was going to happen when we were there, I think probably was more powerful than anything there anyway.
It's not a real conducive environment to baby making.
Yeah, definitely.
Dang. Yeah, add stress upon stress upon stress. To this situation. Okay. So, all right. So what happens?
So we went for the first one. I think because I'd heard so many stories, like from this podcast and from like looking online with all the Facebook groups that I was in, I knew that it was so unlikely for it to work the first time. So for me, the first time was just figuring out whether it actually, you know, was legit and was going to happen and whether they were actually going to treat us. I think Nicole's she teaches computing and she's got like a very computing mind. Like, she was like, well, we've done all of this, so it will work, like it, and it's exactly on the right time, it will definitely happen. And it didn't, and obviously that was really difficult. I think I was a bit more expectant of that than she was. But we'd actually taken time off work for that to go as well, because we didn't know how long we were actually meant to spend in Cambodia to do it. We were like, we gave ourselves, I think it was 4 days the first time to kind of go to the clinic, to get everything set up, to like get the scan, get the IUI done, have a bit of chill time afterwards, and then fly home, which is which is not really what you want to do. No. 2 days after an IUI, but it was okay.
What was it like walking in there and you don't know what you're going to get? Were they warm? Were they welcoming? How'd it go?
I think for them, they were just like business as usual, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It was one of the times, like, there was so many other like heterosexual couples in the waiting room. And I think I've heard it on the podcast before where people have said it was like the first time that they felt like, oh, I'm actually at an advantage for right. once. Like, these people are all here because they've had issues. Whereas
yeah,
I'm
down and out. Not,
yeah, I'm here just because of like circumstance rather than issues. Yeah,
totally. Okay, so you go, you try, doesn't work, you fly back, and then what do we do? You still have one straw.
Yeah, so we had one straw and we were like, right, okay, well, let's get to it. Can we do it the month after? Yeah, okay, we can, let's do it. We kind of got into a weird cycle where it was like 2 week sections where you were like, mm-hmm. right, okay, well, IUI, 2 weeks, okay, let's test. We did really well at not testing before 2 weeks as well.
Good job. That's hard.
I saw so many people in the groups that were like, they'd take a picture at like 6 days and mm-hmm. then they'd be like inverting the colors and everything. I was like, I don't want to do that to myself.
No, you drive yourself crazy. Yeah. I have bought so many pregnancy tests in my 3 years. I can't even. It's like so ridiculous. I don't ever want to look at a pregnancy test again in my life.
I did secretly buy loads. It was only once we got a positive one that I admitted to Nicole how many I'd actually bought. So I just was convinced it was going to take so long and that we would right. need so many. And yeah.
Wow. So you were still doing like the testing and stuff in Thailand, but then you would go to Cambodia to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you went the second time.
Yeah. So it was 2 weeks. We found out that it hadn't worked. And then we were like, right, okay, book the flights again. Book all the appointments.
And how much are flights?
Not hugely expensive. I think they were around like 100 to 150 US dollars ish
okay.
per person, which obviously every time you go builds
right,
up.
Right, each time.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. The treatment itself was actually really cheap. So it was 250 US dollars for an IUI,
oh,
which was really good. It was a lot more expensive for IVF. So we were like, mm-hmm. please, I would really like IUI to work.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they charged you to hold the sperm there?
Yeah.
There was like a storage fee?
That was really cheap, okay. which was good.
Small mercies. There we go.
Yeah. But it was adding on the price of the flight and the hotel every time as well. That was kind of like the treatment price as well.
Yeah.
So we went back the second month, and that was in our summer holidays, which was meant that like we didn't have to take any time off work. Tried again, didn't work. All this was happening in like the monsoon season. So there was storms constantly. We flew into somewhere at one point and it was like the plane was all over the place.
Oh God, no, no, no. I can't handle that.
Which again is not very good for stress. You know,
no, it's not.
Everyone tells you the most important thing is relax. It was really hard to be relaxed. And it was the third one that was right at the end of the summer. We'd kind of gone, right, okay, well, the not drinking thing's not like making a difference anyway. So I'm going to have some drinks. Like, that's fine.
Yeah. Ease your tension.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, right, I'm not going to be so kind of strict about mm-hmm. that kind of thing. We actually had an argument on the morning of the IUI about work because we were about to go back to work as well. So again, mm-hmm. that kind of stress aspect of it was not mm-hmm. great. So we were convinced that the third time just wouldn't work. And we actually went into the doctor's office and were like, can we ask about IVF? And she was like, maybe you should try the third IUI first.
Oh, good for her.
And we were like, well, okay, fine. And then we were like, well, okay, maybe we would go to a fourth. I don't know. So we did it. All fine. Flew back. And then work started. I then got COVID. Actually, we both got COVID.
Shit.
At that time, you still had to like isolate for 10 days or something, or maybe it was two mm-hmm. weeks. Mm-hmm. So we were just convinced it's not happened this time. We were already planning like the fourth time, and I was going to go by myself because I knew the ropes now and it was totally fine. And then it was day 14 at the weekend. I had done a COVID test and was still positive. And then I did a pregnancy test and it was also positive. And we were like,
that's the positive.
Oh my God.
Holy shit.
We were like, oh my God, this is crazy.
But also you have fucking COVID.
I know. And I couldn't go to the hospital and sort of check everything was okay because I had COVID. So I had to wait until I was negative to do that.
That's scary.
Yeah.
Talk about stress. Okay, but yay.
I know. But because it was all through the monsoon season and because we had all that stress, and then we call the baby Stormy because it's storm season. And then actually his due date will be back in storm season again. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. So that's our you're pregnant now.
Yes.
Stormy. You can name him Storm. I love that name. Okay. So how far along are you?
24 weeks now.
24 weeks. Yeah. Okay. You're getting close. You're getting there.
We bought the stroller and car seat yesterday, so it was like the first big purchase that we'd done, so it feels
buying
very real.
Buying a stroller is like buying a, well, I don't know, living in a city, and you're in a city. Like, the stroller is everything.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, you're going to raise the baby there in Bangkok. Are there same-sex families around? And
there's loads of same-sex families. There's actually a Facebook group called, I think it's Rainbow Families in Thailand. I think that's what it's called. Yeah, it's got loads of LGBT families. We're excited to stay here. I think initially we both moved to Thailand thinking, oh, this will probably be 2 years and then either we'll go back home or we'll go somewhere else. And then we kind of loved it so much we stayed. Then we thought, well, okay, we'll have a baby and then we'll go. But we both really want to have a family and raise them in Thailand.
Amazing.
Because it is such an amazing place to be.
That's so exciting. I'm so excited for you guys. This is fun.
Thanks. We're very excited too. We're definitely thinking, I mean, obviously we haven't had this one yet and we are already thinking about the sibling.
Okay.
Because we want to make sure that everything's set up and okay for that as well. We've still got two straws in Cambodia.
Two. Okay.
And we're planning on buying, I think, four more and storing them for a while.
I think that's smart.
Yeah.
I always recommend buying more sperm because my journey took very long. Mm-hmm. So I went through a lot of sperm, but I think it's better to have more than less. Yeah. And you can always sell it. You can always give it to other families who are trying if you don't need it anymore. There's options for it. You just have to pay for the storage, unfortunately. The things we talk about, it's ridiculous.
I think now that we feel like everything's okay and everything's kind of progressing well, we kind of feel like we can relax a little bit. Although every time I go for an appointment, I feel like they're going to tell me something bad.
Well, yeah, that's normal. But what about, you're still incognito.
Yeah. Now that we're pregnant, it's actually fine. It's not an issue now. Because hospitals don't ask questions particularly. You know, they know that. So when the baby's born, we'll be able to only put me on the birth certificate. So Nicole won't be able to go on the Thai birth certificate. But there is a process by which we can get her put on the UK certificate. I think it's quite expensive and time consuming. It's a possibility. So that's what we'll do.
And what about parental rights though? What does that do? Does the UK birth certificate signify parental rights? Because in the States it doesn't.
I believe that the UK certificate says it's parental rights. Because it's parent one and parent two. That's the way that it is on the UK birth certificate.
That on the state certificate too, but from what we've been told by lawyers is that only signifies identity.
Okay.
So it does not, like in a court of law, would not necessarily hold up as parentage. Okay. Which is like so fucked up and dumb, but that's the loophole we go through here. So it's something to look into, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's where the Stonewall had recommended some lawyers that knew about that kind of thing. So that'll be the thing that we do as soon as we can, really, when he's born.
Yeah, because how does it relate to Thailand? So if you get the parentage in the UK, will Thailand recognize that? I mean, they have to.
I think they have
to. How does it work?
And the thing is, a lot of it is about so if something happens to me, what happens to the child? What happens to Nicole? So that's one of the things that we need to think about. And really, obviously, the birth certificate that won't happen until he's several weeks old. Right. So we've talked about like getting a will done and a living will as well, and making sure that at least there's something there, and also making sure that my family are aware of like what happens if something happens to me. So that's like the most immediate thing that is would be a worry. After that, it would be like if we were traveling or something like that. If Nicole's traveling with the baby and I'm not there, you know, how do we do things like that?
Right, right. And in most cases, nobody would ever bat an eye. Nobody would ever ask a question, but you just don't know.
Yeah.
And so you have to go through every single scenario to make sure that everything's buttoned up and good to go, right?
Yeah, definitely. And it's horrible to think about the worst case scenario, because I don't naturally think like that. I'm a very anxious person, but I don't necessarily think about the worst case scenario like that.
No,
I kind of think everything's going to be totally fine.
Right. Well, you don't go about your daily basis like thinking about your demise and your death. You know what I mean? Like that's not fun. Nobody wants to do that, but we have to. Yeah. I interviewed somebody recently who put it nicely. She was like, I mean, this is like, we're talking like if a bird comes and plucks me out of the sky kind of situation. I like that. I like that kind of thinking, right?
Yeah,
like,
that's nice.
It's not going to happen, but in case, you know, yeah. I like that. Yeah. I like that mentality. But got a lot of things to figure out and go through. And I'm so glad you came to talk, because when we had our pre-call, you said, like, I want to help other couples. Like, if I can help one other couple who's over here or international and trying to figure this out, then it's worth it. And so that's why, it's a big reason why we wanted to tell this story, just to give somewhat of a blueprint, right?
Yeah, definitely. We actually met a couple here, also international school teachers at a different school, at a brunch, actually, a drunken brunch that I wasn't drunk at because I was pregnant.
You gotta love those.
But they were both from the UK and were planning on going back to the UK to do fertility treatment and then moving back out to Thailand. So they were kind of going to kind of pause their life really for a while.
Yeah.
So we spoke with them and said, look, we do know a way that you can do it here. It's hard, but it's possible. So that was, it was really nice to be the ones, because we'd gone to other couples and asked them, you know, how do we do it? Then we were the couple that kind of were able to help others. And that was really nice to pass that on, the knowledge that we'd gained.
That's great. It's queer drafting, LGBTQ drafting. That's what we do.
Yeah.
We help each other out.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for telling your story. And, you know, I think I'm so excited. You have to stay in touch. You got to let us know. You got to send us a picture when that baby comes.
We will.
Well, we're all sending you good baby juju, good baby juju, good birth juju.
Thank you. Yes, I need that. No scare stories.
The Queer Family Podcast.
Well, folks, I really hope you enjoyed that episode. I know I did. What a good story. But the conversation is not over, folks. Be sure you're following the show on all the socials. We're on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at the Queer Family Podcast. You're going to get photos of all the guests there, some videos, and just, you know, all around fun from yours truly. Who doesn't want that? Don't miss out. You don't want FOMO. Nobody wants FOMO. And don't forget to join me on Patreon to help me create this super important queer content. You're going to head to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast to sign up and get that bonus content. And one more thing, if you love this show and want to represent your love for us and our beautiful families, you need to head to our shop and get some Queer Family Podcast merchandise. We've got so many designs, and you can put these designs on any product in the store. We've got t-shirts, mugs, hoodies, notebooks, face masks, laptop cases. You're just going to go to tpublic.com and search for the Queer Family Podcast. Or you can find the shop on our website at thequeerfamilypodcast.com. There's so many ways. All right, folks, that's it for this week. Tune back in next week for another episode all about family, but with gay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.